ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
So we're reading today from the 9th canto, chapter 18, entitled King Yayati Regains His Youth, text number 23.
Yayatiranabhipretam Daivo Partham Atmanaha Manastu tadgatam budva pratijagraha tadvachaha.
Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Translation: Sukadev Goswami continued, because such a marriage is not sanctioned by regular scriptures, King Yayati did not like it. But because it was arranged by providence and because he was attracted by Devayani's beauty, he accepted her request. Purport: According to the Vedic system, the parents would consider the horoscopes of the boy and girl who were to be married. If according to astrological calculations the boy and girl were compatible in every respect, the match was called Yotaka and the marriage would be accepted. Even 50 years ago, the system was current in Hindu society. Regardless of the affluence of the boy or the personal beauty of the girl, without this astrological compatibility, the marriage would not take place. A person is born in one of the three categories known as Devagana, Manushyagana, and Rakshasagana. In different parts of the universe, there are demigods and demons. And in human society also, some people resemble demigods, whereas others resemble demons. If according to astrological calculations, there was conflict between a godly and a demoniac nature, the marriage would not take place. Similarly, there were calculations of Pratiloma and Anuloma. The central idea is that if the boy and girl were on equal level, the marriage would be happy, whereas inequality would lead to unhappiness. Because care is no longer taken in marriage, we now find many divorces. Indeed, divorce has now become a common affair, although formerly one's marriage would continue lifelong, and the affection between husband and wife was so great that the wife would voluntarily die when her husband died, or would remain a faithful widow throughout her entire life. Now, of course, this is no longer possible, for human society has fallen to the level of animal society. Marriage now takes place simply by agreement. Dampatye biruchir hetu, Bhagavatam 12.2.3. The word abiruchi means agreement. If the boy and the girl simply agree to marry, the marriage takes place. But when the Vedic system is not rigidly observed, marriage frequently ends in divorce. Hare Krishna. So, seeking the blessings of all the assembled Vaishnavas, particularly Sri Radhesham Prabhu. So, we are continuing with the narrations here of the pastime of how King Yayati recovers back his youth. And in this particular verse, Sukadeva Maharaj is continuing to explain to the question that Parikshit Maharaj raised to him as to how it is that although Shukracharya was a very powerful Brahmana and Yayati was from a Kshatriya caste, how is it that Shukracharya agreed to this particular marriage? And in the purport, Srila Prabhupada very elaborately explains how it is of prime importance that before a man and a girl, a boy and a girl are married, there are so many considerations that need to be taken care of. The traditional society, as Srila Prabhupada here explains, even 50 years back, it used to be the custom that the parents would arrange for the marriage between the boy and the girl. And one of the most important aspects that the parents would look into were the astrological compatibility. And if, from an astrological point of view, the relationship was matching, in the sense that the astrological calculations were matching, then only the marriage would take place. And in addition to that, Srila Prabhupada makes two other points which are also very important. What is the quality of the person or the persons who are getting married? So if a person is having a demigod-like quality, then that person would not ordinarily get married to a person who is having a demoniac quality. So that was the second criteria that the families would follow. And the third one was between two different castes, means whether a Brahmana, Kshatriya, Shudra or Vaishya, between them there is what is called as a concept of Pratiloma and Anuloma. So Pratiloma means where a person, a man of a lower caste marries a girl of a higher caste. So this was not acceptable to the society in those days. Whereas Anuloma marriage was definitely preferred. Normally marriages would take place between persons of equal status, a person within the same caste. That means a Brahmana would get married to a Brahmana, a Kshatriya would get married to a Kshatriya. But if there was a marriage between persons of two different castes, then an Anuloma marriage was preferred. That is, where the boy would be of a higher caste and the girl could be of a lower caste. So in such a situation, what happens is that the progeny automatically get elevated. Whereas in the other case, where the woman is of a higher caste and the man is of a lower caste, the progeny actually get degraded. And we see also, like in the case of Romaharshana Sutta. Now Sutas as a caste or as a community, they were actually products of such a marriage. Because in the case of Romaharshana Sutta, he was a product of a Brahmana woman and a Kshatriya man. So, and we know from the pastime of Romaharshana Sutta how it is that, you know, he, although he was actually educated by Vedavyas himself, he had all the knowledge that a person could possibly have. Actually, that knowledge made him proud, and because of that, he could not actually respect even the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Lord Balaram, who came in front of him, he could not respect him because of this pride that had come into his heart. So this marriages that would take place would be long lasting. When a person gets married through the astrological calculation, after taking into account this Pratiloma, Anuloma, as well as whether a person is having demoniac or demigod qualities, such a marriage would be long lasting. Right? There would be no question of divorce. In the traditional society, there was never a question of divorce. Because a woman, a girl who leaves the protection of her father and comes under the protection of her husband, is expected, or is rather expecting, that she would get taken care of till the end of her husband's life, after which the protection would pass on to her children. So a woman in the Vedic system was continuously protected. From the time of her birth up to the time of her marriage, she would be protected by her father. And then from the time she is married up to the time that her husband departs, she would be protected by her husband. And then after that, her sons would take care of her. So there would never be a situation where a woman would be left alone. Because a woman who doesn't have a protector is subject to exploitation. So the Vedic system, understanding that a woman is physically of an inferior stature as compared to a man, ensures through the system of being taken care of that she will always be protected. And any woman who wants to get out of the system invariably finds herself exploited. So we see in the pages of Srimad Bhagavatam, there are so many examples of women who are so highly chaste and committed to their husbands that there is never even a single thought in their mind other than serving their husbands. And what to talk about serving their husbands. Even the husband, before he actually gets married, he prepares himself for marriage. Like we have in the classic example of Kardava Muni. So we see over here, he's such a great sage. He is instructed by Lord Brahma himself to prepare for marriage. Because Lord Brahma wanted that he create progeny. So Lord Brahma comes and instructs him that now you should do tapasya in order to get a suitable wife. And Kardama Muni did tapasya not for 1 or 2 years. He did tapasya for 10,000 years. Right in the middle of the forest, he was doing tapasya for 10,000 years. And at the end of 10,000 years, because of his intense meditation and desire to see the Lord actually came and manifested himself in front of him. So Srila Prabhupada explains in the purport that actually, because the Lord was completely convinced about his devotional quality that was there in his heart, the Lord actually manifested in front of him. And Kardama Muni prays to the Lord. And then the Lord tells him that, I already know what you are praying for. And just a few days from now, a woman who you would actually, who would be fitting to be your wife, would be given in marriage to you by Swayambhu Manu himself. And we see in the prayers that Kardama Muni is offering to the Lord, he prays to the Lord that, my dear Lord, please give me a woman of like disposition. And Srila Prabhupada comments in the purport that this term, like disposition, is very, very important. Unless a person, again, is having a like disposition, that means where the man and the woman are compatible, marriage will not be successful. And Srila Prabhupada further states that actually as per astrology, a man is considered to be very fortunate if he has great wealth, if he has good sons, and if he has a good wife. And further Srila Prabhupada states that a person is to be considered to be most fortunate if he has a very good wife. So Kardama Muni knew that for him to advance in his Krishna consciousness, he needed to have a good wife. And although Devahuti was brought up in the palace because she was the daughter of Swayambhu Manu, who was the emperor of the whole universe, so obviously she was brought up in exceptional luxury. But when it came to selecting a husband, she knew that if she wanted to make advancement in her spiritual life, she needed somebody who was able to help her in her spiritual life. So heart of hearts, actually she had given her heart to Kardama Muni. And although she knew that it would be a life of great hardship that she was actually selecting, still she opted for getting married to Kardama Muni. Swayambhu Manu was very happy to get her married. And it is described that the beauty of Devahuti was so great, she was so incredibly beautiful, that at one time a Gandharva king who was passing overhead, and he happened to see in the palace of Swayambhu Manu that Devahuti was playing with a ball. When this Gandharva king happened to see her from top, as he was flying through the airplane, he was so much enchanted by her beauty that actually he toppled down and fell down. He lost his balance and fell down from his airplane. I mean, she was so beautiful. So if she wanted to get a husband who was as materially accomplished as her, it would not have been very difficult. Yeah, because after all, her father was the emperor of the whole universe. But when it came to selecting a husband, she wanted to get married only to that person who would help her in her Krishna consciousness. And although in this case, Swayambhu Manu was a Kshatriya and Kardama Muni was a Brahmana, because this marriage was an Anuloma marriage, it is perfectly appropriate for Devahuti to be getting married to Kardama Muni. And then we all know how Devahuti, in serving a husband with so much of intensity and love, and Kardama Muni would go into deep trance and meditation, he would actually go into samadhi for several weeks, months and years at a time. And throughout this period, Devahuti would be serving her husband with so much of intense affection and love that she became emaciated, all her hair turned grey, her body became thin, and she would be dressed in rags. So this was a life that she voluntarily selected to adopt, just so that she could serve her husband, at the same time make spiritual advancement. And Kardama Muni, when he came out of his samadhi, he realized that his wife was serving him in such a wonderful way that she waited for years. She was not even taking prasadam. She was just waiting till her husband came out of the samadhi. He was so happy. And heart of heart, the Paramatma revealed to him that actually now is the time that Devahuti, she was having this intense desire to become a mother. And then Kardama Muni, with his mystic abilities, he created this magnificent palace which had the ability to travel at the speed of mind. It could go from anywhere to anywhere just by thinking of that particular place where you wish to go. And this particular aerial mansion, as described in the Srimad Bhagavatam, was so fabulous. It had practically everything. It is not just like one of those airships that we see nowadays, where a person has to sit for, you know, if he's traveling to New York, he has to sit for 15 hours in just one seat. There's hardly any place for him to move. But this mansion, aerial mansion, had huge palaces, huge gardens, there were birds that were singing, thousands of maid servants which were available for Devahuti's service, parks, and you name it, everything, whatever was required for a person's comfort and luxury was available in this aerial mansion. And to further increase the sense gratification of a person, it was able to move from one place to another place. Because typically, even if you have the most magnificent of homes, after a particular period of time, you tend to get bored. That's why we see that extremely wealthy people, they have not just one home, they have several homes spread around the world. So that whenever they get bored of staying in one house, then they move over to another country and stay over there for a few days in that home, and then a third home, and a fourth home, and a fifth home, and so on. Because in material nature, you can never be satisfied. Material nature ensures that somehow or the other, we are always dissatisfied, whatever may be our situation. Even if you are in the most comfortable situation, materially, material nature will ensure that we are always in anxiety. Like His Holiness Radhanath Swami was explaining in his class recently in Hyderabad, that in the jungle, every animal is so insecure. You have a bird, right from a bird, right to a rabbit, to a deer. Now this animals, if you watch them very carefully, they are always, although they might be eating, they might be living quite comfortably, yet they are always in so much of anxiety. Their eyes are constantly moving just to see if there's any predator who is going to be coming to attack them. So there's a tremendous amount of insecurity out in the animal world. Every living entity out in the animal world, or in the bird world, or any other, snakes or any of these living entities, they are in so much of anxiety that at any point of time there will be somebody coming to attack them. Right? And you'll always see that the eyes are constantly moving. So even the case of a tiger, which is supposed to be the most ferocious animal, if a tiger wants to go out and hunt for food, there is a particular bird which sits on the back of that tiger, and as the tiger is approaching its prey, this particular bird starts shrieking. And anybody who hears the bird shrieking, I mean any of the living entities, they immediately know that a tiger is approaching. And then they all run away. So this tiger wants to get this bird off its back because it knows that this bird is actually coming in the way of its food. But then what can it do? It just has to tolerate. Actually the bird is so small, the tiger is so large, the tiger is so ferocious, the bird is so innocent. But yet, the bird is controlling the tiger. So that's the material world. That however powerful you may be, you are in so much of insecurity. So here is Kardama Muni, who has given this most opulent palace to his wife. And then for 100 years, they are going around the whole universe from place to place, enjoying the bounty of nature, whatever nature has created. And then at the end of the 100 years, Kardama Muni gives his wife 9 beautiful daughters. It's a long pastime. We have, after that, Mother Devahuti having one son, Lord Kapila, who instructs her on the Sankhya philosophy and so many other things. So the point is that a woman like Devahuti, who otherwise is so materially qualified, when it comes to selecting a husband, she knew what was it that was actually important for her to do. What was the important qualification that she should look out for in a husband? And this was a quality that a woman always had, of being completely surrendered to the husband. And we see also in the pastime of Maharaj Rantidev. Now here was a king who was so much concerned about his subjects that he actually did a fast for 48 days. And not just him alone, his wife was also part of that process. So we had his wife, his children, everybody participated in this particular fast. So for 48 days after fasting, when King Rantidev and his entire family members were practically on the verge of death, when the time came for them to break their fast, some excellent prasadam, which was not actually desired by Maharaj Rantidev, but which came on his own accord, some excellent prasadam cooked in ghee was offered to Maharaj Rantidev and his family. And just at that time, when all the family members together were about to sit down and honor prasadam, a brahmana comes to his house asking for food. And Maharaj Rantidev immediately welcomed this person to the house and gave him whatever he desired. And after the brahmana left, a shudra came. He was also fed very wonderfully. And then after him, a person with several dogs came, who was also fed. And then a dog eater came, finally. There was nothing actually left, very little food was remaining. But whatever was available, the entire family sacrificed for the guests. So the marriages that were made were one of sacrifice, where the wife would sacrifice everything for her husband and the husband would sacrifice everything for the wife, so that both should advance in Krishna consciousness. So a successful marriage is where the husband appreciates the needs, the necessities of the wife, and the wife appreciates what are the needs of the husband. And the wife is always supportive, and the husband can perform his duties. I remember about 25 years back, and this was one incident that actually was so much deeply ingrained in my heart that even today it appears as if I had actually witnessed this yesterday. So I was working in some company, and it so happened that the director of that company had arranged for a get together at his residence for all the executives. So we were, and this particular person, and I was really impressed by his abilities and his qualities, and he was a person of tremendous passion and the need to perform and need to excel in his work. Tremendous amount of drive, tremendous amount of success in whatever he had set out to achieve. I mean, he had everything that a man could possibly want. And I always used to wonder, what is it that is really driving this person? How is it that he is able to get all this positive qualities? So anyway, we went to his house, and it was the evening. And you know, although I had worked in this company for a couple of years, I had never had a chance to meet his wife. He was a middle-aged person, aged around 50 years. But somehow, there was never an opportunity to meet his wife. And for the first time, when we were in his house, I was introduced to his wife. And although this person was extremely handsome, tremendous, terrific personality, and as I said, was very outgoing personality, I found that his wife was very meek, humble, chaste. I would say not at all from a material perspective, good looking. I mean, she was one of those ladies who typically one sees in a village, you know, very simple. And this lady, as soon as we entered into the house, she greeted us very warmly. And then she escorted us through the rooms straight into the room where her deities were located. And a magnificent altar, beautiful deities. I still remember, at that time I was not Krishna conscious, but I still can visualize in my mind the whole room which she had actually made. It was a very big house, but that particular room that she had made for the deities was so beautiful and so well decorated, and the deities in the altar, they were so magnificently dressed. And then she took us to the deities. She introduced us to the deities. I don't recollect what the names were, but then she introduced us to the deities, and then she gave us Charnamrit. Actually, she told her husband to give us Charnamrit. She gave the Charnamrit vessel to her husband, and then she told her husband. Her husband very meekly, you know, which was very unusual. I mean, when I was interacting with this person, I would find him full of dynamism, but then in front of his wife, extremely weak, meek and humble himself. So he took this Charnamrit and then he distributed it to all the staff members. And then of course, after that, we all went together and you know, we continued our get together. But the thing was that I was so impressed with this lady's chastity, her meekness, her humility and her bearing. So although from a material point of view, this lady was not looking, you know, extremely beautiful, or having any of those material attributes, but because of her spirituality, one could see a tremendous amount of beauty in her. You know, there was an inner beauty that was actually coming out to the surface. And then at that time I realized the true strength of this man's abilities or whatever he is achieving in life is because of his wife. Because in the Vedic system, a wife is so much concerned about her husband that all the time she is meditating on how she could serve her husband. All the time, 24 hours of the day, she is practically meditating on how she can serve her wife, serve the husband and the children. And we all know how it is that, particularly in the South, we have this concept of Sumangali, where a woman is actually meditating that I should leave my body before my husband. She's always constantly praying. And of course, that's what this festival of Karwa Chauth also is, where the woman is praying for the long life of her husband, and she prays that, let me leave my body before my husband. But I had come across one woman who was actually, she was serving her husband so nicely, Her husband was handicapped. He was, in fact, having several problems with his health. And they were quite old. But this woman was constantly praying that she should actually outlive her husband. But see the amount of service attitude that is there among in the wife. Normally a woman would pray that I would leave before my husband. But in her case, she was praying desperately to the Lord, that, my dear Lord, let my husband depart before me. Because she was concerned that till the end of his life, she should take care of him. Because she knew that if she didn't take care of him, if she were to leave her body before her husband, then there would be nobody to take care of her husband. So she was so much concerned that she should take care of her husband till his death, that she was praying to the Lord that, my dear Lord, please ensure that I am alive till my husband leaves his body. So that is the standard that a woman, you know, in a mood of serving a husband, sets upon herself. I'll just conclude with one very last story, which was also so impressive to me. We all know this pastime, the pastime of Mahatma Gandhi himself, the father of our nation. You know, how it was that once he and his wife had a very fierce argument. Practically, you know, there was so much of heated words that were exchanged with each other. And finally, Mahatma Gandhi got so much angry with his wife that he just told her, you get out of my house. Leave my house this moment right away. I don't want to see you ever again. And Mahatma Gandhi kicked his wife out and slammed the door shut and walked into the room. And this happened late in the evening. And Mahatma Gandhi went to sleep. And next day morning when he got up, he opened the door. He saw that his wife was sitting outside. So he asked her, what are you doing? I told you to go to your father's home. What are you doing sitting over here? So his wife very, very meekly said that, whose home do I go to? Which home do I have? There's only one home that I know of, and that is this home. So if I'm going to leave this home, I don't have anywhere else to go. And then Mahatma Gandhi realized, yes, what she was saying is true. And then he said, okay, come in. And that's how marriages were made. So maybe there are differences of opinions. So there are, you know, heated arguments, there are words that are exchanged between the husband and wife. But at the end of the day, if there is a realization that the husband and wife need each other, and they are keeping Krishna at the center of their lives, and trying to make advancement in their Krishna consciousness, if they have that understanding, then come hell or high water, they will stay together. And if one actually analyzes it, if one cannot be happy in one marriage, how can a person be happy in the second marriage, or the third, or the fourth, or the fifth? Like recently, just about a few days back, we had a lady who had got married to 8 persons. Yeah, she was one of the most famous film stars. Yeah, all of us know about her, Elizabeth Taylor. Right? I mean, she was like a household name. Yeah, 50 years back, 40 years back. She had got married 8 times, I think, till after that people stopped counting how many times more that she was. You know, as far as I remember, she had married 8 times. And out of that 8 times, 3 times she had married to the same man. Right? So every time she started coming back and getting married to the same man, coming to the conclusion that that man is preferred to the other men that I'm getting married to. Right? 8 persons. I mean, 8 marriages. How could a person possibly be happy when he is thinking that successive marriages are going to make me happy? So Srila Prabhupada also concludes over here that if the boy and the girl simply agree to marry, the marriage takes place. But when the Vedic system is not rigidly observed, marriage frequently ends with divorce. So the Vedic system, observance of the Vedic system you know, is what ensures continuation of marriages. And we see that even in our Krishna consciousness society, there are so many couples who are married for 40 years and 50 years. Recently, I remember we had a very wonderful couple come over here, Madhusudan Prabhu and his good wife, Kanchana Bala Mataji. Madhusudan Prabhu has been practicing Krishna consciousness since 1967. He met Srila Prabhupada in 1967. And practically within a couple of years, they got married. And for 41 years now, they have stayed together. So I was asking Madhusudan Prabhu, how is it that, you know, in US and, you know, so much of problems and, you know, so much of material influence, how is it that your marriage remained intact? Didn't you have any ups and downs? He said, of course, we had so many ups and downs. There were weeks at a time when we would not talk to each other. He was very honest to admit. But he said that we realized that there is no other solution except for us to remain together. If we want to make advancement in our Krishna consciousness, the only solution is for us to remain married. Because getting married to somebody else, either for me or for my wife, was not a solution. Because there's no guarantee that that marriage is going to work. So then what's the point in trying something where you don't have a guarantee that it's going to work? So just like Madhusudan Prabhu, we see there are so many wonderful devotees in our movement who have been married for 30, 40, 50 years, and practicing Krishna consciousness so wonderfully, enthusing others in their own Krishna consciousness. So these are the role models that we have to look up to, because in this material world, there are going to be problems. There are going to be difficulties. There are going to be differences of opinions between husband and wife. But if we are convinced that we have to make this work, we have to put in all our efforts to make this work, because there is no alternative for us. This is the best alternative for us to make advancement, because that is what our constitution is. Our nature is to be within the grastha ashram. So if we follow that particular nature, then it's important that we understand that although there are going to be difficulties between the husband and wife, we have to make the best use of a bad bargain and continue in our Krishna consciousness. So if we have that particular attitude, like as Srila Prabhupada mentions in at least a couple of places, that grastha ashram is difficult. Because two individuals are coming together and staying together, they're going to be bound to be differences of opinions. But yet, if we keep Krishna in the center of our lives, if we keep to the association of devotees and chant the holy names of the Lord sincerely, there's no way by which we cannot make advancement even within the grastha ashram. Although, of course, the brahmachari ashram, the sannyas ashram, the best possible means to make advancement in Krishna consciousness. But even then, the grastha ashram, we can make advancement in our Krishna consciousness if we keep Krishna in the center of our lives. Jai. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki. Jai. Granthraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki. Jai.